This is The Takeaway, Tanzina Vega with you this week. And we've all been watching the Olympics, a beautiful display of world unity and peace in the name of sports, a moment for countries to come together to cheer on their top athletes. But Dave Zirin, sports editor for The Nation magazine and host of the Edge of Sports podcast, says there's always a darker side to the Olympic Games.
I've been covering the Olympics since roughly 2004, the Athens Olympics, which were also the first post-9/11 Olympics. And what I see in each and every place is the same pattern, and that's debt, displacement, and the militarization of public space. Now, these are facets that certainly existed before 9/11, but since 9/11, you've seen it ratcheted up to a shocking extent, to the degree to which the host cities themselves become completely disfigured by the Olympics, and it becomes an aggravator for problems that already exist, because in many cities, those are already issues. You know, displacement, another word for that is gentrification. You know, militarization, hyper-policing, debt, of course. I mean, these are issues we speak about in the best of times in the big cities in this world. And yet, the Olympics tend to make all those problems much worse.
And you see, in a recent op-ed, you describe this as the chasm between the glitzy spectacle and the grittier reality of the Olympics. You say that that's become a feature of the Games.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the tale of two Olympics. Every Olympics is really two Olympics. I mean, you have the Olympics that, of course, are incredibly pleasurable for the viewer because it's a time for us to engage with sports that otherwise we don't usually get to see. You know, and that can be a beautiful thing, to see that kind of physical expertise and the awesome power of some of these different events. I know in my house we were watching figure skating last night, you know, just at the very start of it. The Olympics also make a tremendous amount of money for sponsors and a tremendous amount of money for the weapons industry. And by weapons, in this case, we're talking about closed-circuit TV cameras, drones, hyper-surveillance, tear gas, things of that nature, the latest in tear gas, which is always developing new technology. So you've got that aspect of it, but then you've got the people who actually have to live in these cities. And for them, they're going to be paying for the Olympics for years, if not decades, after they're done. There's no such thing as a cost-neutral Olympics. These Olympics, for example, in Pyeongchang, they're already in at over double what they thought it would be. It was a $6 billion budget. It's costing $13 billion. Now, that money has to get paid somehow, and it's not being paid by sponsors, and it's not being paid by ticket sales, which are anemic at this point, which even with the games already really underway. So this is where we are, and it's very painful. John Carlos, who was an Olympian back in 1968, he, of course, famously raised his fist on the medal stand with Tommy Smith. He has this line that I always repeat where he says, the reason they only have the Olympics every 4 years is because it takes them 4 years to count the money.
Wow. But Dave, I mean, there's a lot of bad news out there these days, and I think,
sure,
you know, aren't we being a little bit of a downer here by sort,
yes,
of, you know, piling on in the Olympics? And is the one thing, you said you were watching figure skating last night, so was I, and it was sort of a break. Let's talk a little bit, though, about North Korea and South Korea. Isn't this a good thing, at least?
Man, it's so interesting. It's like, yeah, let's talk about a break. And oh, by the way, the nuclear hotspot on Earth is where the Olympics are going to take place. What's happening between North and South Korea is fascinating because on the one hand, we saw in the opening ceremonies, North and South march out together. And there's the way in which these Olympics are being played up as if it is signaling a thaw in relations between North and South. And it's certainly true that South Korea is, because of the belligerence of Donald Trump and his inability to practice diplomacy or have a State Department, that South Korea is trying to use these Olympics to basically go around Washington, D.C. and try to negotiate with North Korea to lessen tensions. That being said, they need to worry about lessening tensions in their own country because there is popular resistance in South Korea to this kind of joint marching exercise for the openings of the Olympics. Polls show 70% of the country is against the women's hockey team, North and South, coming together and performing as one. because you can't wipe away those tensions that do exist between North and South. And what should frighten South Korean leaders is that a lot of these numbers aren't coming from people who are elderly, people who remember the Korean War or grew up with stories. It tends to be younger South Koreans who don't like growing up under the specter of nuclear annihilation.
What about those of us like you and I who are sitting in our living rooms and will probably be sitting in our living rooms or on looking at our phones and watching these games? Are we allowed to watch them and enjoy them?
Of course. I mean, I don't think there's any such thing as a sport that's somehow clean and somehow pure. And so I just think it's about us being conscious as we watch these events, like what is happening behind the scenes, who's paying a price for it. But you can make those arguments about most sporting events. I mean, the Olympics is pretty egregious. And I think there are very real reforms that we should be conscious of. And if the Olympics are coming to our town, I think we should be prepared to organize and fight against it. So a lot of this is about us just being very knowledgeable about the price tag, both in terms of actual money and in terms of the human and social cost of what goes into hosting the Olympics. Because if there's one thing I've seen in covering this over the last, 15 years or so, is that the only thing that forces the International Olympic Committee to change is when people in prospective host cities say, we are not going to host. That's the only thing that gives them pause. And we've seen that in Oslo, Krakow, Chicago, Boston. I mean, you've seen popular movements to not host the Olympics.
Maybe we'll see some of that in the next Olympics.
I think that's highly possible, particularly, though, if you look at Los Angeles, which is supposed to host the Summer Games in 2028. I mean, that's 10 years away. And I can tell you that people are already organizing in Los Angeles to make sure that as the Olympics are built over the next decade, it's not done on the backs of Los Angeles's poor.
Something to absolutely stay aware of and conscious of. Thanks so much, Dave, for joining us.
No, thank you.
Dave Zirin is a sports contributor for The Takeaway and sports editor for The Nation magazine. You can catch him on the Edge of Sports podcast.